Welcome to Lafayette We're Here, the French history podcast for the American public by a Frenchman. I'm your host, Emmanuel Dubois, and today we have a special episode. We have a guest, Salina Baker, and together we will discuss Nathaniel Green and Lafayette, partners in freedom. So Salina, please introduce yourself to the public and tell us where does your passion for history comes from?
My name is Salina Baker. My passion from history really actually came from my mother, who kept books, biographies in the house about different people. And the first biography I read was, when I was 12, was Napoleon. And she had a lot of different biographies, Lincoln, Mary Todd Lincoln. I can't remember who all, but I started reading them as a kid, and it just kept my interest in history alive until I got in high school and things, you know, kind of got swept away there. But I've always been interested in history.
And you seem very interested in the people that made history, like biographies and stuff like that. That's cool. And Napoleon for our first one, yeah, I can relate.
Yeah, I'm sure you can.
And so tell us about your latest book, The Line of Splendor, a novel of Nathaniel Green and the American Revolution.
Yes, I actually wrote a 4-book historical fantasy series about the American Revolution called Angels and Patriots. When those books were published, I decided I need to write another novel, and Nathaniel Green was in 3 of those books, and I basically became pretty much obsessed with him. So I decided to write a biographical novel about him. It's about his life, about the American Revolution. And it's done really well. I'm pleased with the results of the book.
I got the book just a few days ago, so I have not read all of it yet, but, you know, I've enjoyed what I've read. Yeah. Well, it's fine. You know, I'd rather have a long book than having you skip a lot of details. Here I can see you went into deep detail, makes it a very, you know, compelling read. And you want that when you actually are invested and interested in somebody. You don't want to skip around too much. You want to understand the process they went through. And I think you did a very good job at that.
So, thank you. I did include a bibliography as well, so mm-hmm. that people that had interest in reading more or knew where I got my resources from could see that. I didn't put every single resource in there, but I did put quite a few.
Yeah, you did. It's always useful, definitively. So can you give us a quick overview of Nathaniel Green's career as a soldier, but also a man? Basically, what was he like? When you begin your book with the sentence, Nathaniel Green stands head and shoulder above the generals who served under George Washington in the American War of Independence. So you seem to hold the man in high esteem.
Actually, those are not my words. Those are the first words of the foreword. Mm-hmm. And the foreword was written by Ricardo A. Herrera, who is a U.S. Army professor and military historian. He wrote a book called Feeding Washington's Army. About the Grand Forge, Valley Forge in February 1778. And of course, Nathaniel Green is in that book. So Rick was kind enough to agree to write a foreword. So those were actually his words. Mm-hmm. As far as Nathaniel Green as a man, he's an interesting person. He was very sensitive to criticism. He had a limp. He had asthma. He had a smallpox scar on his right eyeball that was often infected. And he was self-educated. And I think that a lot of his sensitivity to criticism came from those things. He was pedantic. He was irreverent, often not respectful. He was funny. His son, Nat, said that his dad taught him funny songs when he was a kid. And Nathaniel used to entertain his brothers by making fun of a character in a novel series called Tristan Shandy. So he could be a funny guy if he wanted to. As far as his military career was concerned, he joined a militia company called the Kentish Guards that was out of Greenwich, Rhode Island in 1774. And he joined as a private. And when he applied for lieutenant, he was denied because of his limp. And he was completely mortified. But when the first shots of the American Revolution were fired in April 1775 in Massachusetts, the Rhode Island General Assembly formed an army of observation, and they plucked Nathaniel from the ranks and promoted him to general. And he marched his new army from Rhode Island to Boston, where the provincials were keeping the British under siege in Boston. And then when George Washington arrived, the Continental Congress appointed 8 brigadier generals and 4 major generals. And Nathaniel was the last brigadier appointed. He was the youngest, Army's youngest general at age 32. Then he was promoted to major general in August 1776, right before the Battle of Long Island. In the winter of 1778, when the army was at Valley Forge, they were looking for a new quartermaster general. The previous quartermaster general had resigned. And under pressure from Washington and Congress, Nathaniel accepted the job, but he hated being quartermaster. But he did his best. After that, after he resigned in July 1780, his letter to Congress, his resignation letter, as an example of his disrespect, his letter so infuriated members of Congress that they threatened to remove him from the army. And Washington put a stop to those threats. Right after that, he oversaw the tribunal of Major John Andre, who was accused of espionage with Benedict Arnold to sell the plans to West Point. And right after that, Nathaniel was given command of West Point for a whole week. And then when General Horatio Gates lost to Cornwallis in Camden, South Carolina, Congress let Washington choose his own general to command the Southern Army and replace Gates. And he chose Nathaniel Greene. And Nathaniel commanded the Southern Army. And this is where he broke all these military doctrines, divided his army, and he managed to chase Cornwallis out of the Carolinas and into Virginia, where Cornwallis ended up surrendering at Yorktown. So that's pretty much his military career in a nutshell.
It's a very impressive rise. I mean, he went from private to brigadier in like 2 years. That's, you mm-hmm. know, that's on par with Lafayette, if not even faster than Lafayette. So it's really, really impressive. And how did it go when the war ended?
When the war ended, he went home to Rhode Island. He was under a huge amount of debt. He had had to sign a guarantee for £30,000 to clothe his Southern Army. And he went home to Rhode Island under this horrible debt that he couldn't pay back because Congress wasn't paying anybody. I mean, Lafayette also was not being paid. I don't think Lafayette was being paid anyway. But
he used his own money during the war, I think.
Yes, he used his own money, right.
He was rich.
But Nathaniel Greene didn't have his own money. So he went home to Rhode Island, and the state of Georgia had given him a plantation. They also gave him a plantation. South Carolina did as well. So Nathaniel and his wife, Katie, decided that they would move to Georgia. And they did. They moved to Georgia in 1785. And that's where Nathaniel Greene died in 1786.
Hmm. So, yeah, short but brilliant career, you could say.
Yes, he was only 43.
Yes. And he died of a heat stroke, correct? That's what I read.
Yes. Yes. And of course, they bled him and blistered him, and none of that worked. And
yeah, surprisingly so.
Right.
Yeah, so we have a man here who has some disabilities, a very strong character, very harsh person, but yet funny, very direct, I imagine. So I can see why you would want him as a command officer. You want somebody that will give orders rather than receive them, right?
Right.
How did he meet the Marquis de Lafayette, and what kind of relationship did they have? Because Everybody knows about the Washington and Lafayette relationship, very father to son. I mean, they were quite the age difference. But here, they're only 9 years apart. So they're basically the same generation, you could say.
He met Lafayette in August of 1777, not long after Washington met Lafayette himself. He met him in Warwick Township, Pennsylvania, at headquarters there. And Nathanael Greene wrote that Lafayette was a very sweet-tempered young man, which was a big compliment coming from Nathanael, because a few months before that, Nathanael Greene, Major General John Sullivan, and General Henry Knox promised to resign from the Continental Army if there were French officers who were allowed to be made Major General over them. One of them in particular came over here and was supposed to be promoted to Major General over them and take over the Continental Artillery, which, of course, General Knox was in charge of. And they had just threatened to resign right before Nathanael met Lafayette. So for him to say that was a huge compliment.
But I get their point of view. Also, you have those French guys coming over, taking important roles in the army, especially Lafayette. I mean, when he comes over, he's 19 years old. He's basically a kid.
Right.
But I recall when I did another interview, we talked about when Lafayette came over to America, he believed in the cause more than many Americans, I think, believed in their own cause. And also, he was trained as an officer in the French army. And we like to point out that at this point in time, French officers are trained to beat one army, the British army. So they know,
right.
They know the British army probably better than it knows itself, because they want to defeat it, especially after the Seven Years' War that left France, shattered.
Lafayette lose his father during that war?
He did. His father was killed in Germany. I don't recall exactly where, but he was killed in one of those battles. So he had some personal history, even though Lafayette, I think, was 2 years old when this happened. But mm-hmm. Yeah, France as a country was deeply wounded by the Seven Years' War and lost, its North American empire because of it. And, not go back too much into that detail, but it's certainly part of the French spirit at that point. And of course, you have everything that comes with the American Revolution, all the ideals that go through that, all the Enlightenment ideas that were circulating in that era. And you could see that Lafayette was deeply involved in those, and he will be his whole life. Until his very last moments, actually. And he took part in two more revolutions after the American one, the French Revolution of 1789, and then the other one in 1830. So even though he was a noble and military man, he took part in three revolutions. That's not everybody does that.
And right. Quite an accomplishment, yes.
It is. And he's, I would say, nobody's perfect, but he stayed pretty true to his own beliefs his whole life, which is not that common, especially when, he had a pretty long life. And which brings me to the next point. The war in America was very hard for everybody, especially for the Americans, of course. And over the course of the war, were there moments when Washington, Greene, and Lafayette didn't see eye to eye? You told me that Greene had a very strong character. So were they opposed sometimes on some course of action, or did they have a very beautiful cooperation?
I've never read anything where Nathanael and Lafayette didn't see eye to eye, where they disagreed on anything. But that doesn't mean that I don't know every single thing about Nathanael Greene, but I've read a lot of his letters and I've never seen him write anything derogatory or argumentative about something that Lafayette did. Washington and Greene often didn't see eye to eye. Like I said, Nathanael was sensitive to criticism, and oftentimes he was commanding Virginia regiments or divisions, and Washington wouldn't write Congress saying, "Oh, you guys did a great job," like during Brandywine or Monmouth. And this bothered Nathanael Greene, and he would confront Washington about it and say, "Why did you do this?" And Washington would tell him every time, I'm not going to highlight the Virginia regiments because Congress is going to think I'm playing favorites. And so this didn't set well with Nathaniel. And that's probably most of the times they didn't see eye to eye. So it was probably pretty conservative. Nathaniel was frustrated with Washington when he was in the South because he felt like he wasn't getting enough support from Washington, but other things were going on in the North at that time.
Yeah, generals always complain that they're not getting enough support when they're in the field.
Right.
You know, that's something you always see, especially with big campaigns like that on a huge amount of territory. You just can't send support everywhere. It's just not doable.
Right.
And I can see his grievances were with Washington. It's because of the role of Washington. Washington is a general, but he's also a politician. You know, he has to find a balance here. Greene was a general. So he didn't have to strike that balance. He has to win the war.
Right. And that's exactly what you said. He was not a politician and he wasn't good with diplomacy. And he saw that Washington had all these troops marching down to Yorktown. And Nathaniel's like, why can't he send me some of these troops? You know, he's got like 15,000 men and Nathaniel has like 2,000. So you can kind of see Nathaniel's frustration over that, too.
Of course. And I know, you know, there were some operations that engaged both Lafayette and Greene. And I was wondering, even after a few years with the Continental Army, Lafayette was still a foreigner. You know, he was still a French officer. I know he was not the only one. And then later in the war, a whole French army came over to America with Rochambeau. And the French fleet came over also with Admiral Destin. But I still wonder, was Lafayette still needing the support of some officers like Greene to be accepted within the Continental Army? Was that, you know, it was not an issue anymore pretty quickly? Because you mentioned at the beginning there were frictions.
I think it wasn't an issue anymore pretty much after Brandywine, mm-hmm. when Lafayette got wounded there, shot in the leg. I think that he proved himself that he was willing to take a bullet, literally, for the Continental Army and the Americans. So I don't think Lafayette needed to prove himself too much after that.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I know after he went to France to help get the bigger, more French help, he was a useful diplomat in that respect. And I think that was very much appreciated in the States. And were there some operations where Lafayette and Greene would have to work directly together in the South in those campaigns, or then not working together?
In the South, and they did not work directly, physically together. Nathaniel Greene had command of Delaware all the way down to Georgia, which was given him in October 1780. Washington sent Lafayette to Virginia about 5 months after Nathaniel took over the Southern Army, which he took that over in December 1780. And then when Benedict Arnold arrived in Virginia, I think it was then when Washington sent Lafayette there with about 1,500 troops. When Lafayette went to Virginia, he was technically under Nathaniel Greene's command, but they stayed in extremely close contact. And it was Lafayette that wrote to Nathaniel Greene to keep him informed of what was happening in Virginia. Baron von Steuben was also there, and he also kept Nathaniel Greene informed. And I think this was, even though they were long distance, they were working very closely together, keeping each other informed of what was going on. And in fact, one of the most famous quotes Nathaniel Greene ever said was, "We fight, get beat, rise and fight again." And this was after the Battle of Hobkirk's Hill. He had lost another battle. And he wrote to Lafayette. That was the line that he wrote to Lafayette on May 1st, 1781. And I think most people don't realize that famous line was written to Lafayette because Lafayette was someone Nathaniel wrote to often when he was distressed as well.
Yeah, they established they had a good friendship, I mean, from what I understand. I mean, even if they were not physically next to another, they complemented each other in some way from what you are telling me here. So,
yes.
And pertaining to that, I read in your book that there was some issue dealing with the Admiral Destin, the French admiral, and both men had to deal with him. And knowing a bit about Destin, I can imagine the discussion. But can you walk us through this event?
Okay. This was the Battle of Rhode Island. And Major General John Sullivan was in charge of the expedition. The British were holding Newport in the area around Newport, Rhode Island. And Nathaniel Greene begged Washington to let him go, but Nathaniel was quartermaster general of the Continental Army then, and he wasn't supposed to have field command. But Washington wrote to Congress, and they agreed to send him down to Rhode Island, and because that was Nathaniel's, where he was from, and he knew the countryside, and he knew the politicians. So he had influence there, but Lafayette was also down there. And he had some 2,000 troops. He actually had command of his own part of the army. So Lafayette and Nathaniel met with John Sullivan the end of July. Lafayette had the left wing. Nathaniel had the right wing. There was Admiral Destain came down there to support John Sullivan. It was one of the first concerted American and French operations during the war. So it was really important, and it was a really big deal. And they needed Destain's firepower from his ships, his fleet. And they also, he had some 4,000 or 7,000 troops, Destain did as well. About mid-August, Sullivan and Destain had an agreement that they would attack the British around August 10th. Well, Sullivan jumped the gun and did it a day or two earlier, which irritated Destain. And then soon after that, Admiral Lord Richard Howe shows up with the British fleet, and he and Destain go out to sea and fight it out. But during that time, there's a big storm. And it rakes Rhode Island. It ruins the British fleet. It ruins Destain's French fleet. The ships are badly damaged, and of course, they're also damaged from the battle between Admiral Howe and Destain. And Destain tells Sullivan that he's going off to Boston to get his ships repaired. And John Sullivan goes crazy. He's completely irritated. So he sends Nathaniel and Lafayette out to Destain's flagship to negotiate with him. And I assume Lafayette is translating for Nathaniel because Nathaniel doesn't speak French. And of course, Lafayette's French. And this makes sense, right? So the two of them go out to the flagship, and Nathaniel Greene gets really seasick. And they were talking about having a nice French meal. And Nathaniel Greene's like, I can't eat anything. And so Destain allows Greene to write a petition and plead his case as why he should stay and not abandon the American army. So Nathaniel writes this petition, and Destain answers it by sailing away to Boston. So this irritates John Sullivan even worse, and then he makes this huge deal out of it, and now Washington is afraid there's going to be an international incident. John Sullivan holds a war council, and they sign this agreement, pretty much insulting the French, telling them that they're not being supported, they're not doing what they said they would do, and it's really derogatory toward the French. Everyone signs the agreement, including Nathaniel, except for Lafayette, because now Lafayette is upset because they have attacked his countrymen, basically verbally. Lafayette writes to Washington to tell him how upset he is. he tells Nathaniel Green how upset he is. And Nathaniel Green sympathizes with Lafayette and says, I understand. And I think partially because Nathaniel was sensitive to criticism, so he can see why this would irritate Lafayette. Lafayette ends up going to Boston to help calm down D'Estaing's, and he's gone there to have his ships repaired. He misses the Battle of Rhode Island because of that. He returns a few days later. So this was a something that was done closely between Nathaniel and Lafayette, trying to keep D'Estaing calm, trying to keep everything from blowing up into this horrible incident. And Nathaniel also went to Boston after that to help calm things down. But by then, John Hancock and Lafayette had calmed D'Estaing down, and things were going okay by then. So that was their, I think their closest concerted effort was the Battle of Rhode Island.
I can imagine Lafayette being between D'Estaing and Greene and translating in every sense of the word, because I'm pretty sure it was not a straight translation. You told me how direct Greene could be, and D'Estaing being this traditional French Navy officer, you have to be careful with those people. They don't take up criticism very well, or they don't like being told what they should or should not do. And the French can be pedantic too, believe it or not.
Yeah, I believe it. And Nathaniel was aware of that. He was trying to be careful not to. He knew D'Estaing had orders, and he was trying to be careful not to interfere with those orders. But nevertheless, D'Estaing was like, I don't care what you say, I'm leaving. So
yeah, I mean, he had his reasons. I understand that. It's always, as I said before, it's always a balance between what you think you should do, what your orders are, your own judgment of the situation. I mean, I can see an admiral saying his ship's being damaged, well, I have to fix them before doing anything, or it's going to get worse. It's also a fair point. But I can see the soldiers on the ground saying, hey, we need your guns.
So. Yes, yes, they did need them. And they lost the Battle of Rhode Island.
Yeah. But in the end, they did prevail, including with the help of D'Estaing.
Yes.
To go back to what I said before, Lafayette was very ideologically involved with the American cause, the American Revolution, because I think he felt it went beyond what was going on in the America at this point. It was a turning point in the way we actually consider state and organization in countries and democracy and all this stuff. I mean, and he was proven right just a few years after in his own country of France. So he went risking everything overseas for this with his own money, as we said. And so his commitment cannot be denied or understated. And would you say that Greene shared the same commitment, or it was a soldier doing his job?
No, he shared the same commitment. The opening quote that in my book is, I'm determined to defend my rights and freedom or die in the attempt. And Nathaniel often said things like that. He said he was determined to save South Carolina or die in the attempt. And he left his family. He left his wife was pregnant with their first child. They were pretty much newlyweds when the war broke out. And he still left her with his family and went off to war. And he didn't go home during the war, but only a few brief days. He was completely committed to the cause. And in fact, Nathaniel Greene, Henry Knox, and George Washington were the only three generals that fought the entire Revolutionary War. And Nathaniel Greene was so committed, like I said, when he was in command of the Southern Army, he wasn't getting money from Congress to support his army, or the money he got was worthless. He signed a guarantee for £30,000 to clothe his own army, and he didn't have that money. But he risked everything, including his own family, to do that. Hmm. And he gave everything he had, even days when he was ill. He suffered from jaundice. He was extremely ill during the Battle of Rhode Island. So his commitment level was definitely the same as Lafayette. He believed in nationalism, but he didn't believe as much in the political parts of it. He dealt with politicians a lot, and he kind of disapproved of the way politicians handled themselves, to be honest.
I can see why, though. Especially from a soldier's point of view, sometimes you can find politicians to be a bit sneaky, let's put it this way. And so they had this great relationship during the war. And did Lafayette and Greene remain friends after the war? Did they still exchange letters or stuff like that?
Yes. And in fact, Lafayette came to visit Nathaniel Greene. He came back to America in 1784. He came to Rhode Island to visit Nathaniel. They were living in Newport. And in fact, one of his daughters, Cornelia, remembered this visit. And she had a crush on Lafayette. And he told her to call him my dear Marquis. And she wrote about this, how she remembered him visiting them. And Nathaniel Greene was buried in Savannah, Georgia. And his body, they didn't know where he was buried for 100 years after his wife died and stuff, and no one knew where his remains were. When they found Nathaniel Greene's remains, he was wearing white silk gloves, the kind that a French officer would wear. And it was assumed that Lafayette had given him those gloves. And he'd also given him some silver presentation cups as well. So they did remain close after the war.
I saw that Washington wrote personally to Lafayette to let him know about Greene's death.
Yes, and he did.
And as you said, it was a sudden death. He was pretty young. And how did his demise affect Lafayette? Do you know that?
I don't know for certain, but I can guess it affected him badly. Before Nathaniel died, he promised him that Nathaniel Greene had a son named George Washington Greene, just like Lafayette had a son named George Washington, right? So Lafayette promised Nathaniel that he would see to it that his son, Nathaniel's son George, would be well-educated. So when George turned 12, Lafayette wrote to Katie Greene, Nathaniel's widow. This was a year after Nathaniel died. It was 1787. He wrote to her and said, send George to me, under my care. I'll pay for his education. He can live with us on my family. At first, Katie didn't respond, but Henry Knox urged her to do this and said, your son deserves this kind of education. So she sent George to France for an education. So when the French Revolution started playing out, George began to panic, and he wrote home to his mother, Katie, and said, please send me money. I need to come home. And about the time he returned to the United States, Lafayette, of course, was in prison. But this was something Lafayette did for his friend, Nathaniel Greene, because it was important that his son have an education. And Katie Greene was still trying to get out from underneath the debt that Nathaniel had left her when he died. Also, when Lafayette came back to the States in 1824, he went to Savannah, Georgia, and he laid the cornerstone for the Nathaniel Greene Monument that's there in Johnson Square. It's still there. When they did find Nathaniel's remains in 1901, he was buried with his son, George. George ended up drowning in the Savannah River right after he came home from France. When they found Nathaniel and his son, George's remains in the Grand Vault there, they moved their remains underneath that monument that Lafayette laid the cornerstone for. And when he was there, Lafayette gave a plaque, it was actually a steel engraving to Nathaniel's youngest daughter, Louisa Shaw, and it it said, "Dear Mrs. Shaw, from your father's friend and companion in arms, Lafayette." So it was really, when I read that, it was really a kind of heart, tearing up about, this is how close he felt to Nathaniel Greene.
Yeah, it's a very deep relationship that they had. It goes beyond just fighting together. I think they had some intellectual connection here because, Lafayette knew, I don't know how many hundreds of people during that war. He didn't keep this kind of relationship with every single one of them. So I guess Greene had a special place in his heart, from what you're telling me. Just like Washington did. And vice versa. From everything I've read about Lafayette, there are not that many people who actually met him and didn't have a strong impression of the man. He always left an impression. Not everybody loved him, of course. Nobody's perfect. But nobody considered him somebody to be forgotten or not respected for some
reason. Right.
He was very respected. He had a very troublesome period in France during the Revolution. From hero to zero, he was the most loved soldier of France. Then he was considered a traitor by some. As you said, he did some prison time. He was freed by Napoleon, funnily enough, even though Lafayette never liked Napoleon, considering him a usurper. But he spent some time in Austria in prison when he left France. He was actually not captured by the French. He was captured by other countries were opposing the revolution. So it's a complicated second half of his life. And then he took part in the revolution of 1830. He saw many rulers fall, this man. Just in one country. Anyway, so is there anything else you'd like to point out about either Lafayette or Greene or the relation?
Not too much. I think one thing is I have noticed, and I might be wrong, that Lafayette seems to be better remembered than Nathaniel Greene. Not necessarily people that are big into the Revolutionary War, but kind of maybe your more average person. Mm-hmm. If you ask them who were generals during the war, they'll say Washington. They might say Lafayette. And it was probably because he was young. He was French. He was very close to Washington. Nathaniel Greene kind of gets overlooked. And he shouldn't, because actually, if it wasn't for him driving Cornwallis out of the Carolinas and into Virginia, Yorktown, the surrender at Yorktown likely would not have happened, at least not then. So I'm kind of hoping that my book about Nathaniel Greene brings him back a little bit more back into the light where he belongs, not saying anything about, trying to say Lafayette deserves less attention, because that isn't true, because Lafayette is definitely in the novel, because he was an extremely important part of the Revolutionary War, the American Revolution.
Yes, I recall when I read the first book, serious book, I would say, I read about the American Revolution was Almost a Miracle by John Ferling. Read that, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years ago. And I recall he talked a lot about that important role that Greene played at the end, to drive the British out. And yes, this campaign, I've studied many military campaigns. This is one of the big ones. This is one of the campaigns you could see. They played it out completely. It has to work out, otherwise, you don't know how long it's going to keep going. And Cornwallis is no beginner,
Oh, yeah, he definitely was no beginner, right?
He was a very competent general, that he was sent over for a reason. And he was doing his best, of course, as any officer would. So defeating him in the manner that they did, with the coordination that they had between the French army and the Continental Army and the French fleet, especially in this era, quite an achievement. Honestly, quite an achievement with the results that we all know today.
Yes. It's unbelievable what they managed to accomplish.
It is. And I hope people will try to learn more about Nathaniel Greene, because you're perfectly correct. He's not one of the big names everybody knows, and he should be. So he was a big part of it. It's just like, when you talk about the Napoleonic era, people don't know the marshals often, except a couple, maybe Ney or Soult, but, and they were as important as he was in some point. So it's something that people should be more interested in, you know, the people around the big figures. Okay, maybe Washington and Lafayette are the big figures, but you have all these other people around them that played a very important role and tend to be forgotten. And it's something that,
right,
you know, books like yours or podcasts like mine, we try to bring back into the public. Before we sign off, please tell people where they can find you, your book, and your work.
I have a website. It's Selina Baker, selinabbaker.com. That's SalinaBBaker.com. My books are on Amazon or any of the major retailers, or you can find them on my website and click through to Amazon to purchase the books. So I have a blog as well, but I won't get into all of that extra strenuous stuff and confuse everyone. So
that's fine. Well, Selina, I really appreciate you reaching out, this discussion. I learned a lot, and I will keep learning a lot about Mr. Green. It was a great opportunity. I will finish your book. I'm not done yet. And we'll go all the way. I promise.
Thank you, Emmanuel.
Again, it was a pleasure to have you on the show. And we'll talk again soon.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it very much.
Me too. And I learned a lot. And I'm sure the listeners will too. You can find the Lafayette We Are Here podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or on LafayettePodcast.com. If you enjoy the show, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/LafayettePodcast. You can also reach me on social media or by email. All the links are on the website. The music for this podcast is the Marche pour la Cérémonie des Turcs, composed by Jean-Baptiste Lully, arranged and performed by Jérôme Arfouche.